takes place between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m. Events occur.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back. It's Tuesday morning, which means it's a brand new week here at FPC Radio Live. I am Ian Glendon, one of your co-hosts. Of course, I am joined, as always, by Mr. John Sapicetti, who is on the other line. And, John, you know, I saw something on Twitter, and if I was prepared, I would have had this up and going right away, but I actually have it right here. It was something funny that someone posted about... you know, some old school argument. And if Twitter actually loaded, I could actually bring up the actual quote so I can read it instead of just stalling, trying to wait for it to come up. So if you give me just a moment here, hopefully we can actually read it, because I actually thought it was quite a funny little anecdote, let's say. Okay, here we go. Someone posted this. I don't know if it was on Twitter or on whatever, but I forget the man's name, but I once read an account of a 17th century Neapolitan nobleman who had fought more than 20 duels and killed 14 people over the matter of who was the greatest Italian poet, Dante or Ariosto, I apologize if I'm butchering his name. Seeking salvation on his deathbed, the duelist admitted he had never read the poetry of either man. John, does that not sum up Twitter in the modern day, you know, aside from the whole duel thing, although I do feel like that might be a necessary addition as opposed to an edit button, that perhaps dueling could settle some of these debates on Twitter. But I got a kick out of the fact that the guy argued for something that he had never read or researched, and that kind of sums up Twitter in many ways. Don't you think, John? Well, John can't think because he's actually not on the line. So let's give it just a second. And we'll go to the hotline here and bring him back. John, I apologize. I don't know what happened. Apparently, my Bluetooth is off. So, oh, yeah, that's exactly what happened. I got it. I figured it out. This is called Figuring Technical Issues Out on the Fly, people. I made a mistake because I am not quite yet awake. But John, do we have you? Maybe not. One more try.
There we go.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Stop touching all those buttons. You're getting like me now. You're much younger than I am. You should be hip to this stuff. I'm the old guy that, you know, just starts hitting buttons and sets off nuclear weapons worldwide.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think I accidentally kind of just, I kind of screwed up the thing. I was trying to pull up a clip, and I ended up disconnecting from you. But I don't know. Did you hear my whole anecdote, or did I cut you off there?
No, I was in the middle of the anecdote. The only thing I caught was you were talking about Dante as one of the great Italian poets, well, which I agree.
Well, okay, so here's the deal. The end of that little story was basically the guy that was winning all these arguments admitted on his deathbed that he never actually read any of these. He was just arguing for the sake of argument, and my, sure. my whole point was, doesn't that sum up Twitter in a nutshell? Mm-hmm. You know, in a nutshell.
Exactly.
Anyways, it was a great introduction, I thought, to the show, until I royally screwed it up. And this is what we're going to do, John, since I'm having, once again, a little bit of an audio issue here, and I think it's coming across here for those listening. You're coming in on only one of my ears. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hang up on you and I'm going to call you back, John. And in the meantime, okay, I'm going to get us introduced and get us ready for the show. For all those folks out there that are actually still hanging with us right now as we deal through this technical little hiccup. So anyways, today's show, it's Tuesday. It's the first one of the week. We will be talking about obviously what we saw week 3. We have Tom Brady going back to New England this week, so that's going to be a topic of conversation. And of course, John and I will be giving our quarterback power rankings for the 3rd week. This is where we go through every quarterback or every game of the week and decide who we think deserves to be on top of the quarterback power rankings. Now, to clarify, this is not a ranking of the best in the league, although my number one does correspond with the very best in the league. However, this is just a rank of, you know, just like outlets do power rankings for teams. Each week we kind of sit there and see which quarterbacks are performing at the highest level and we rank them. So let's try this. Hopefully this works and we have you in both my left and my right ear. John, you're there, my friend.
I am here. Can you hear me?
Beautiful.
With both channels?
Beautiful. Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. You know what that deserves? That deserves a little bit of a little cheer for me. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
As long as it's not the wave.
No.
Wait. Fine, but not the wave.
Okay. Here we go. Here you go. Here's a question for you. What you have to pick one to get rid of? Only one. Only one. The other one gets done for eternity. Specifically, at Red Sox games. The wave or Sweet Caroline? Which one do you get rid of?
The wave.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough. Yeah, you know what? That might be the easy answer, but look, if I could get rid of both, I would. Trust me, I would. I hate both of them.
It's a good song, although he's talking about a 12-year-old.
Well, he's talking about a 12-year-old. It has nothing to do with the Red Sox, and it's so overplayed, and I'm so sick of it. I'm done with it. Whatever. Anyways. I'm getting besides the point.
I'm going to have to be like Tom Brady on that. I'm going to have to plead the fifth because I might be up for a job with the Red Sox. So I have to be careful.
Yeah, don't worry. We won't. I won't dig you anymore for that.
I might be their new third base coach. That's what.
Oh, there you go. There you go. I'd like to see you out there. Well, you're getting that surgery on your eyes, so you know that's the only thing holding you back.
Well, I got it done yesterday. Oh, good. Right now, I'm talking to you with a shield over my right eye. Which is pretty cool. I look like the logo for the Oakland Raiders or the Las Vegas Raiders.
Oh, good. Good,
little
good.
Slip there, but yeah, we're making progress. So I'm not seeing better yet in the eye that had surgery yesterday, but they tell me it takes a few days to kind of correct itself. But I'm raring to go today because I know we got to rein our quarterbacks. And
yes.
I'm going to ask you this one question, Ian. Mm-hmm. How bad does Brady ever have to play to not be number one?
Well, look, I mean, in the spirit of power rankings, you know, just like any team that sits, you know, say a team sits at number one for a while, just because they lose doesn't necessarily mean they drop in the rankings. It kind of depends on the teams around them as well. But, you know, it's we'll get into it here in a minute. But despite the loss, I mean, I think you would agree with me. I mean, Tom was excellent again. I mean, third game in a row, 420 some odd yards. I know that last drive, obviously, you padded a little bit of the stats, but hey, whatever. You know, he never got to do that in New England, especially when they would just hand off the ball for the last quarter and a half whenever they were leading. But no, I mean, we're going to rank our quarterbacks. And look, I'll be honest, there's a lot more movement in my list this week than there was last week because I think there are we're starting to see, at least for the time being, that first half MVP group, which quarterbacks are starting to distinguish themselves among the others. I think we're starting to see that again. It's only the first half of the season, really the first quarter of the season. So, you know, things can change. But, you know, I think, you know, the movement we're seeing now is starting to shape up to what I think the long term outlook of this list is going to be. But on the screen here, I actually have, before we get into that list there, because I do want to talk about some of the games that we saw on over the weekend and on Monday, of course, last night. Honestly, John, I'm disappointed that we had those. I had that great cold open with the dueling thing. Like, imagine if Twitter debates were settled by dueling. I mean, it would make things so much better. But
only problem with that, Ian, is you would end up being like Christopher Walken in a Deer Hunter playing Russian roulette. Like, you duel everybody.
Yeah.
And somehow Christopher Walken lasted, 7 years playing Russian roulette, never killed himself, which, again, people that are against that movie say, well, that's impossible. And I have to point out to them that, first of all, it's a film. Secondly, it's allegorical. It's not meant to be taken literally. So, you know, that point. But you would be Christopher Walken and the Deer Hunter because you would have many, many duels if it came to that with your defense of Tom Brady, and rightfully so.
Yeah, I think I'd win too. But
you would, absolutely.
No, I do. The lesson learned out of that little anecdote to start the show was that, you know, even that long ago, I think I said 1790 or whatever it was. I don't want to check because I don't want to risk dropping you again. just arguing without even bothering to actually read anything about the person, which I thought was so funny because, I mean, we get that all the time. And it shows. It's so evident when that happens, when people make arguments that they really know nothing about because they don't bother to fact check. And this is true in sports. It's true in politics. It's true in a lot of things that we argue. But since we're a sports show, for the most part, we'll focus more on the sports side of it all. I just thought it was funny. Anyways, over the weekend, you know, my picks, last week I was a lot better. I think I only was off by three. I missed a few. I missed six this week and some surprising ones. New England, obviously, I thought was going to perform a little bit better against New Orleans. They didn't really bring their A game, B, or necessarily their C game, and it showed. Kansas City, surprising. I don't want to say surprising. You know, I kind of wavered. I felt like picking Kansas City to lose 2 weeks in a row wasn't necessarily a smart thing. Tampa obviously got beat down by the Rams. I mean, the Rams really just took it to them. Green Bay, to their credit, came back last second, won that game. Your boy Aaron Rodgers maybe exercised some demons against San Francisco. I mean, you may feel that. Some Packers fans may feel that. This is still a team, the Packers, that I think has a long way to go before they're title contender ready, but they're not far off. I mean, obviously, when you have Aaron Rodgers, there's not much you have to do, but there's certainly some holes, just like there are with the Bucks, certainly are with the Chiefs and other contenders. So, you know, when it comes to issues, all these teams have it. Was there anything that stuck out to you most surprising from this weekend, whether it was a loss, whether it was a performance, a play, whatever? What caught your attention?
Yeah, I think when I look at this is how poorly coached the Chicago Bears are.
Yeah, oh,
and
God, yeah.
You drafted Justin Fields. He's your quarterback of the future. Now, I think every situation is different. Some rookie quarterbacks are ready to play. Others aren't ready to play. The situation they're in is obviously very important. I think we see in San Francisco what they're doing with Trey Lance. They bring him into goal line situations, which I'm sure infuriates Jimmy Garoppolo because, you know, he leads them down the field and then they take him out for Trey Lance to have a rushing touchdown. But I don't know what Matt Nagy is doing when you're not using extra blockers for a young guy who, you know, does have escapability, but is still, you know, going to get beat up because his offensive line is putrid. Like, I don't know what goes through the mind of NFL teams when they don't address the offensive line. I think it is the outside of quarterback. Let's take that out of the equation. Offensive line is the most important unit on a football team. If you have a really good offensive line, your good quarterback can be very good. Your wide receivers have more time to get open. You can control the ball. It takes pressure off your defense. You know, I look at the Cleveland Browns, and the reason I picked them to win the Super Bowl, they have an incredible offensive line. It makes everything else work. The Chicago Bears, like, address that. You know, whether it is go out and sign Joe Tooney or use draft capital, do something to address that offensive line. You draft a quarterback who's going to get absolutely destroyed. And I believe on 80% of his dropbacks, they only had five blockers. Like, you know, add an extra tackle or an extra blocker somewhere to try to make it easy for him. So Matt Nagy, I don't know if he's, you know, going full Costanza with trying to get fired by the Yankees or is, you know, is he just that stupid a coach?
Well, now there's the question of who's going to be quarterbacking the Bears next week. Is it going to be Fields? Right. Is it going to be Andy Dalton or is it going to be Nick Foles? And, you know, what's that old cliche? It's like when you have three quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks.
Right.
And there's a way that you can handle all of this without, first of all, I think, you know, throwing Justin Fields into a situation that he clearly didn't seem like he was ready. I like Fields. I like his long-term outlook. But, you know, we talk about NFL-ready players. I don't think he's one of them. And certainly the situation around him isn't going to help him in any way. But now all of a sudden you've thrown a wrinkle into it by throwing him in there and now threatening to take him out. And this is, to me, one of those things that I, you know, when it comes to development of quarterbacks and, you know, going, you know, thinking of it from a Patriots perspective, and if Cam Newton was still on this team, the complications that could happen if, say, Mac Jones played poorly and Belichick decided just to pull him and start Cam Newton, well, all of a sudden, that doubt could creep into your young quarterback. And look, you don't know if they're ever going to get that back, if they're ever going to get that confidence back. So, you know, I would I'm certainly not panicking. No way. I mean, it's so early, but between the start being sacked, what, 8 times on Sunday, and the prospect of the Bears starting their third quarterback of the season in game four, it's just not good. And I mean, I didn't see any update. I don't know if you've seen one on Khalil Mack, but, you know, if he's out or injured for any period of time, let alone a significant period of time, that's going to hurt the Bears quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if the Lions have a better year than the Bears. I mean, say what you will about the Lions, it does appear that they're buying into Dan Campbell, and they're playing hard. They gave Green Bay a battle for the first half last Monday night, and they were right there against the Ravens.
Tucker hit a 66-yard field goal. Come on.
That's tough, though, isn't it?
They
lost because of a 66-yard field goal. So at least they're buying in, like, and Detroit seems committed to Dan Campbell for a long period of time, at least as far as you can be with a coach. Whereas Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, the general manager, I mean, the Bears would be idiotic if this goes, you know, 4-13 and they don't really develop Justin Fields. It would be time for the McCaskies to say it's time to move on from that pair. So that could go really, really bad. That's a horrible division. Luckily for my Packers, they should win that in a breeze. But, who knows how this is going to happen. And look, Chicago has no history of developing quarterbacks. They've never had a 4,000-yard passer in their history.
That's absurd.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, I know we go back to the 40s, 50s, 60s. There were no 4,000-yard passers. Sid Luckman was the last, like, real quarterback they had. They won a Super Bowl with Jim McMahon. They just never draft, develop, or acquire quarterbacks. It just doesn't happen, and that's why they haven't been able to contend against Green Bay the last 30 years because Green Bay's had two Hall of Fame quarterbacks over a 30-year stretch.
That's why they've never been to a Super Bowl.
Right. Yeah, they went in 2006 with Rex Grossman, but again, they had a great team.
Oh yeah. You said Bear. For some reason, I was thinking the Lions. My apologies.
Well, yeah, the Lions haven't even. The Lions have been to one conference championship game.
Yeah, that's
since
absurd.
The 50s. That's insane. So, it's unfortunate. I do like Justin Fields a lot, but you look at these five rookie quarterbacks that were drafted in the first round, none of them appear ready. I mean, this is a big step up in talent. I mean, we weren't kidding when we said that Mac Jones had better help or better skilled players at Alabama than he does with the Patriots. I mean, he had four first-round wide receivers 2 years ago, and he had two last year, not to mention a first-round running back and three first-round offensive linemen and a, you know, NFL-caliber offensive coordinator and a great head coach. I mean, he's downgraded his supporting cast by coming to the Patriots, and now the defenses you're playing are obviously better than the ones that he faced in college. So I don't know if any of these guys are ready, but there's pressure to play them right away because people are so impatient. You know, and then they do see some rookie quarterbacks have success, like Justin Herbert last year, who was, you know, thrown in to the second game when Tyrod Taylor, you know, had a missed that game and the rest of the year after getting that injection into his lung that went haywire. And Herbert, who I think is the best of all the young quarterbacks, you know, proved last year that he was ready, and certainly this year has proven that he's ready to step up.
Yeah, and some guys translate to the NFL game quicker than others. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to, you know, last forever, but some players have better starts. Now, if we're going to sit here and talk about the quarterbacks right now, I'd say, you know, Trey Lance aside, because he's had such minimal, looking at the numbers, it's just skewed, obviously, based on you know, how limited he's been used and he hasn't really been a quarterback yet. You know, Mac Jones, despite the three interceptions on Sunday, still looks the most comfortable in the position right now because, like, even, you know, I think, you know, there's a lot of issues that the Patriots had, certainly on Sunday. He was probably at the bottom of the list when it comes to that. He certainly could use a little bit of this is the time when your big contract tight ends need to actually come through and pick up, you know, your quarterback. You know what I'm saying? These are the moments with a rookie young quarterback where he's clearly playing. He's playing well. Again, I mean, he needs to get a little bit more accurate, you know, especially with the deep ball, and there's other little things that he needs to improve, but that makes sense because, well, guess what? It's his third game. Like, if you expect him to be a master of everything at this point, then you're kidding yourself. So does he need to improve on those? Yes, but what I saw was very consistently good decision-making, whether it was throwing the ball, getting the ball away, or taking a sack. I thought in very few situations was he vulnerable to turnovers or very big negative plays, and mm-hmm. despite the pressure faced. So to his credit, I think right now he's probably the most capable or steady of these rookie quarterbacks. Now, again, that could change over time as these other guys get more comfortable. And maybe Trevor Lawrence realizes that turning the ball over isn't a good thing and decides to stop doing it. Then, okay, maybe Trevor Lawrence takes the next step. But, like, you know, it takes time. And people are one, like you said, too impatient to want to get these guys in. And then on the flip side are also still too impatient to watch them develop. So, like, you know, when a couple of mistakes happen, all of a sudden, oh, well, he can't do this. Well, no, he just hasn't done it yet. It's three mm-hmm. games. Come on, people. let's give yep. these kids, like, a little bit of time here.
Yeah, and the one thing, too, with the Patriots and with Mac Jones is we expected the offensive line to be a strength of this team, right?
Yeah. Like
going into the season, it was the offensive line is going to be really good. That's going to allow Mac Jones to prosper. That's going to allow these new skilled guys that they signed to perform, and they're going to have a nice, solid offense. Not, you know, Tampa or Kansas City or Green Bay's offense. No one expected that. But at least an offense that could control the ball, keep its defense off the field, put points on the board. Well, that hasn't happened because the offensive line has been putrid, absolutely putrid, which leads me to believe that, you know, Bill Belichick should get on the phone and he and the person he's calling, probably the last two guys that still have, you know, hardline phones, but get a hold of Dante Scarnecchia and get him in here. And even if he's a consultant or whatever, to get him to kind of shore up this offensive line, he's a magician, one of the greatest positional coaches in the history of this league, because that offensive line is a mess. And I know Trent Brown's been out, and that's a big deal, but normally offensive lines can survive that, right? You can still survive with a player being out. Look at the Green Bay Packers, right? David Bakhtiari's out till probably mm-hmm. midseason. Corey Linsley signed as a free agent with the Chargers. And Elgton Jenkins, who's probably the most versatile offensive lineman in football, can play any position. He was out Sunday. The Packers' offensive line was good against a really good defensive front of the San Francisco 49ers. That has to do with coaching and all of that. And you know, the Patriots, I think, should be better than they've been on the offensive line. And that's been a major, major issue because, you know, he's getting hit a lot. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we expected that to happen. Certainly, it's new for him. He didn't get hit at Alabama, that's for sure. So it's a new dynamic for Mac Jones, and it's something that really surprised us.
And look, I mean, that's one of that's where I kind of find a little bit of the silver lining, because, like, even in that pressure, he handled it quite well. I mean, there's sometimes you're going to have to take the sack. There was that really nice play sure. where he escaped pressure, threw it on the sideline, and it was, like I said, an instance where, you know what, Jonnu Smith, $50 million contract, you got to make that catch on the sideline. You just have to. It hit you in the hands. It was well-placed ball. You had coverage on you, but you need to make that play. And, you know, I'm not sitting here saying, oh, they're a bust already. Certainly the returns through the first three games aren't, you know, great, but I think eventually they're going to get this down a little bit. I think for whatever reason, it's just not playing out how I envisioned it, certainly from those guys, specifically the tight ends, but I'm not hitting the panic button yet, because again, I mean, I expect this team, the Patriots that is, to be a 10-win team. You know, anything above that I think is overachieving, but that's what you should expect with a rookie quarterback. You shouldn't expect them to all of a sudden be the best team in the AFC again, because then you're going to be disappointed. So definitely a tough one for the Patriots coming up, though, because we're not going to talk about that now. Obviously, we'll do that later in the week. But obviously, Tom Brady comes to town needing just 68 yards to become the all-time leading passer. I thought he was going to have to. Yeah, well, you know, if the Bucs wanted to win on Sunday or have any chance of winning, he would have had to break that record against the Rams, because you know the Bucs defense was putrid. For a majority of the game, and they just Matt Stafford and that offense just were doing pretty much anything they wanted, so that was going to be a tough one for the Bucs to overcome. But hey, you know what? It's the first matchup of two. Well, I'm looking forward to the second one. Hopefully, anyways, Kansas City,
the NFC divisional round.
Yeah.
As the Packers await the winner in the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, well.
It'll work out beautifully.
We'll see. Hey, you know Brady, he's fine. And if you caught, I don't know, did you catch that tweet of him on the sidelines saying some vulgar language?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Like, you want to talk about, like, I mean, people talk about, okay, being fake in front of the camera, doing this. Who is Tom Brady? Is he this guy? That's Tom Brady right there.
That is
caught, you know, not knowing in front of the camera. Like, there's two great things about that clip. Obviously, the I'm not even going to say it. I'll tweet it from the FPC Radio Live account, and you can read the lips for yourself. It's very clear what he says. And it's really funny because it's just it kind of, like I said, that's his raw emotion right there, being frustrated. But right before that, it was that Undertaker like death stare with his chin slightly tilted up and the eyes almost rolling into the back of his head. It actually frightened me a little bit, John. Not only as just a person, but like as a Patriots fan, because that's. I know we do this all the time with Tom Brady. It's always like that look, and everyone gets crazy about it, and it kind of goes a little out of control. But there's something to it, and he was not happy with the outcome of that game. You know, the Bucs issues are, you know, much like the Patriots, it's Tom Brady's at the bottom of their list for issues, and I wouldn't even consider him an issue because I think he's been really outstanding through three games. Discipline seems to be an issue again for the Bucs. It was an issue last year early on. They corrected it, mind you, to end up kind of middle of the pack when it comes to penalties accepted. But early on, they're taking dumb penalties, pre-snap penalties, motion penalties, holding, pass interference. And look, let's be honest, their secondary is depleted right now. No Sean Murphy bunting. Jamal Dean is you know, trying to fill in. He's doing okay. There's other Carlton Davis has been banged up a little bit. So, you know, there's a lot of issues in the secondary. So, you know, the Bucs are a team that, and I said it yesterday on a couple shows, that remind me very much of the early 2010 Patriots. A lot of talent on both sides of the ball, but their defense was only good in the red zone. And that sounds great and could look great on paper when you look at points per game. But the reality of it is this team is struggling to get off the field on third down. They're not making timely stops. I mean, people will point to, oh, they had two pick sixes. Well, the game was already won at that point. You know, I'm talking about must need pick up your offense or bail your offense out type of backbreaking interception or turnover. That just doesn't seem to happen, and they seem to be giving up big chunks of yards at inopportune times. So, you know, the champs, I still, again, every team has issues. Kansas City obviously has issues. Green Bay still has issues. The Rams, you know, despite how good they've been, you know, they still have some issues that, you know, have popped up here and there throughout the first three games. So I wouldn't hit the panic button if you're Tampa Bay, certainly because you have Tom Brady under center and that offense is still the best in the league and by a lot of measurements. But it's going to be tough to win a lot of games if you're giving up a lot of points like that. And I think the Bucs are going to have to find some outside help to fix that defensive secondary, especially.
We've heard about Richard Sherman potentially going there. And again, I think he's obviously, you know, late in his career, he's 33, 34, he's had some injuries, had some off-field issues, which I think he's resolved. So that could be something, you know, you bring in a corner, kind of like the Patriots did in 2014 with Darrell Revis. Although I would say Revis in 14 is better than Richard Sherman right now, in terms of age. And I also think Revis was a better corner than Sherman, and Sherman's outstanding. I love Richard Sherman, love Darrell Revis, two of my favorite players to watch play. But I would take Revis over Sherman. But yeah, if they can go there and try to tidy it up. They're impossible to run against, although I think the Rams did a really good job in that game of running just enough.
Yeah.
You know, when I watch the Rams, I watch Green Bay, they run similar offenses. They run the ball to set up the pass. They don't need to have the Baltimore Ravens or the Cleveland Browns or the Dallas Cowboys type running games. They just need it enough to put their quarterbacks in second and short. or third and short so that they can set up their play action pass, and that's where they're really dangerous. I mean, Stafford's really good in play action. We know how great Brady is in play action, and so is Rodgers. You know, I mean, some of the bombs that Matt Stafford hit Deshaun Jackson with were just incredible. I mean, he was 20 yards behind the secondary because obviously they're biting on the running game. So that's what those teams look for. But Tampa Bay will be fine. They're the best team in that division. I know Carolina's 3-0. That's all well and good. But, you know, look at the quality of opponents that they've played. Tampa will be just fine. But now you're jockeying because that first seed is important because you get the bye and home field advantage. But look, Tampa was the 5 seed last year, and they won the Super Bowl. And with that quarterback, they're quite capable of going into any place and winning. So the key thing for them is getting their defense straightened out and remaining healthy. That's always an important thing. I mean, that shot that Gronk took, as soon as he took that shot, I'm like, is he done for the year? Because we know the issues he's had with his back. But I don't think Rob Gronkowski is going to miss Sunday's game unless he's in a wheelchair. And well, even then, he might go out there and play.
the results came back negative in terms of, like, you know, he just got hit in the ribs, and from what it looks like, maybe it was a little bit of a bruise, or maybe he just got the wind knocked out of him. But you're right. I saw that, and I'm like, oh, man, this is, you know, bringing back some old memories of just watching this happen. And to this point in his tenure with the Bucs, there hasn't been a moment like that where you held your breath. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, you know, this is a team that, you know, you have to deal with injuries throughout the season. And how you respond is certainly, you know, that's going to be worth watching for this Bucs team who, you know, so far, you know, have been dinged up a little bit. And we'll see what happens moving forward. So for us moving forward, we're going to rank our quarterbacks because we only have about 8 minutes left. And I want to get into this because I think there's going to be I think there's going to be more disagreement this week. Or at least more variety this week than there has been in previous weeks. But we'll see. So I'll start. And number five for me, after spending a couple weeks outside of the top five, he makes his miraculous, not miraculous, but expected return to the top five. And that's Mr. Aaron Rodgers. You know, I sent you a text for proof that I actually do compliment and appreciate Aaron Rodgers' play just based on, you know, the responses I was seeing after that game and knowing that eventually I was going to have to go the opposite and really nitpick that victory. If I were speaking to someone that was claiming that was the greatest comeback in the history of the NFL, I would point out that, you know, they were given an opportunity late in that game to close that game out, you know, with the ball San Francisco territory before the Jimmy G pass, and he didn't do it.
Yep.
To his credit, they came back. He made some really that first throw to Devontae Adams, even though he seemed open, it was just the anticipation and the placement of the pass it was great. It was a beautiful pass. Really, obviously, set the tone for that entire drive. At that point, you knew they were already essentially in field goal range. I mean, you still had to gain another 15 yards, but at that point, that was a given. You should expect that. Still, again, you know, I'm not ready to you know, jump on the, you know, we expected this Aaron Rodgers train. No, I mean, like I said, if I'm nitpicking, I'm going to nitpick that, but I'm not in the spirit of nitpicking right now. I'm going to give him credit where credit's due. He had a great game. He was a big part of why they won that game. And they're going to need some more performances like that from him, down the road. So number five for me, Aaron Rodgers.
I'm glad that he's in your top five. He's also in my top five. But I have Kyler Murray at number five. He's playing out of his mind at this point. Such a great dual threat, great leadership ability. I think the team really supports him and believes in him. Still prone to turnovers and also looking at some of their wins, especially the last one, you know, they were kind of life and death for a while with Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Although Jacksonville had that 109-yard return off a missed field goal, which is – why are you attempting a 68-yard field goal unless you have Justin Tucker trying to win a game? That's kind of a difficult call. But nonetheless, Kyler Murray, you know, former first overall pick is playing like that. And again, one of the most fun players to watch in the league. So I've got Kyler at number five.
Number four for me is Derek Carr. I mean, look, 3 weeks in and, you know, he's looking more and more like that 2016 version. of Derek Carr, which the Raiders need. I mean, they obviously have been lacking that elite quarterback play. And, you know, look, talk about playing with fire with these wins. Hey, at the end of the day, he's pulling it through for him, and he very much deserves to be in this top five. So number four for me is Derek Carr.
Yeah, they've become a fun team to watch, right? Because seems like they've kind of taken over the mantle of what the Chargers were with Philip Rivers. Like, say what you will about Philip Rivers and the Chargers, but for about a decade and a half, they were a great team to watch, although I can't stand watching, or I couldn't stand watching Philip Rivers play quarterback. It's like watching Elaine Benes dance. But they were always in these crazy close games, and they were trying to score at the end, and he was waving the team down the field, and ultimately they would fall short. It seems like Derek Carr is doing all that, except they're winning. Derek Carr has been outstanding. Number four for me is Aaron Rodgers. Again, to recover off that god-awful first game against New Orleans, to come back the last 2 weeks and look like himself, was apropos. I think by the time the season ends, we'll probably have Brady and Rodgers meeting in the playoffs and ranking them 1-2 again, because they are the two best quarterbacks.
Oh, for sure.
Especially from the neck up. I mean, it's just these guys have seen everything. They're comfortable with what they're doing. It, you know, when you do something for a long period of time, you get more reps, you get better at it. That's just life in general. So I have him at number four. And I agree with you. On Sunday night, he was spectacular for most of that game, but there were some opportunities to really put this thing away much earlier, especially when they went for it on fourth down and weren't able to convert it. It looked like just a whole botched sequence, which, you know, sometimes they have a tendency of screwing up things from the coaching staff coming into him. He does drain the clock way too much. I've called him the Stanley Kubrick of quarterbacks, and that it's just like he's looking for perfection. But no, he's back to being who he is. So I have him at number four.
Yeah, and to clarify, Kyle was surprised that I had Carr over Rodgers.
No, that's fine.
This is a power rankings list. So yep. Since Rodgers has been working its way, I mean, that first game, obviously, that just plummeted him down the list. So you got to work up a little bit. And Carr was in my list last week. So I would imagine, Rodgers probably by next week. I mean, again, we're shaping up to have most of, most of the assumed best two. I mean, we both agree that Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers are the best two quarterbacks in the league. This isn't a list of the best quarterbacks in the league, although, again, my number one may just happen to share the same title. But anyways, number three for me. Hopefully that clarifies everything for you, Kyle. I don't want you to think that I actually think Derek Carr is better than Aaron Rodgers. I clearly am just, making sure that Aaron Rodgers, really pays for that really bad first game. He's got to work himself up. Number three for me, Matt Stafford. This was tough because that first week that we did these power rankings, I think we both forgot about Matt Stafford, or at least I did. I know that.
No, I think I had him number one, actually, because I think he's going to win the MVP.
No,
yeah,
I don't.
He's gonna win the
did you have him
this
at
year,
number
but
one?
I had him very, very high.
Oh, okay. Well, then it was just me. I kind of just forgot about him, to be honest with you. I can't forget about him anymore. I mean, clearly he's had a great start to the season. He was great against the Bucs the other day on Sunday, right there in the mix for the MVP. And I think, obviously, being with Sean McVay, and as much as I like to kind of, crack on Sean McVay a little bit, he's still a really good offensive coach, and they have some – I mean, Cooper Kupp's the guy is just always open. I don't know how he's always open. And Matt Stafford, being the veteran, isn't going to know how to get him. Now, obviously, long term, I worry, one, about his health, because he has had issues health wise. I think we've already seen in these first 3 weeks him come up wincing after a hit once. Now, obviously, it didn't end up being a big deal, but. To Kyle's point, he said, I forgot about Stafford so much, he forgot you talked about him. Well, I forgot about him on my list when I was making it the first week. But anyways, there's always that concern with him long term. And look, he's not certainly not Brett Favre, but he's still got a little bit of that mistake waiting to happen feel. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe that's just, the Lions stink still on him. Maybe that's part of it. But I still look at that. I'm like, all right, well, let's see what happens long term. But I mean, he's playing phenomenally, and number three, and I don't see him going down this list anytime soon.
Yeah, number three for me is Derek Carr, and I'll echo everything you had to say there. He's playing outstanding. And it's a difficult situation because you always feel that John Gruden wants to replace him at some point.
Yep.
Although they're in their fourth year together, and I hope that John Gruden has bought into Derek Carr and thinks he can win with him as his quarterback, because right now they're 3-0 with some really impressive wins. But he's an overlooked quarterback in that group with kind of like Kirk Cousins, although I prefer Derek Carr over Kirk Cousins because I think he's just a better athlete. He can beat you with his legs more so than Cousins can, and I think he has a slightly better arm. So I have Derek Carr at number three, and he's off to a fantastic start. It's going to be a fun Monday night game next week when the Raiders go out to Los Angeles to play the Chargers. That somehow, you know, when you first looked at it, when the schedule came out, you'd say Raiders at Chargers, how good is that going to be? Well, you know, that's going to be an interesting game next Monday night for sure.
And next for me, Kyler Murray. He was high on my list last week. I don't think he did anything to warrant being moved down, so he stays at number two for me. I mean, he just, again, it's exciting. We talked about him a lot last week, just how much fun it is to watch him play. I mean, he has a hell of an arm. He's quick. The quickness, I think, is just what really separates him. Just from, you know, whether it's other running quarterbacks or other smaller quarterbacks, it's just that quickness is there, and he's certainly making it happen right now. And, you know, A.J. Green turning back the clock, first 100-yard game in almost 3 years, and that's on a day where DeAndre Hopkins is pretty quiet. So Kyler Murray right there in that mix for that MVP early on this season, so he's number two for me.
Yeah, I think we're going to agree on the top five, just in a slightly different order. Number two for me is Brady. Mm-hmm. He's playing at an elite level. He's still fantastic. It's not his fault that they didn't win on Sunday. He put up 24 points against a really good defense. And also, you know, people around him weren't really up to par. I mean, Mike Evans, again, for as talented as he is, sometimes kind of goes off the reservation from time to time. Like, it looks like he's not quite there. But I have Brady at number two, and I don't expect him to really move down from that throughout the entire season. He's playing at an incredibly high level. It's really fun to watch, and it's also kind of like mystifying. It's like we can't explain it, but just enjoy it.
Well, he's and this kind of obviously leads into my number one, who is still Brady. And look, I have a feeling, you know, I thought it because I was looking, and I was like, well, I could have moved him down maybe a spot. But at the end of the day, there was really nothing that he did poorly against the Lions, or the not the Lions, the Rams, whatever. Lions, Rams.
We're gonna do this all year, right?
Yeah, it's driving me nuts. Yeah. It's driving me nuts. Yeah. It's killing me.
We're gonna see Goff and think Rams. Yeah. And I'm gonna continue to call Mac Jones Mac Davis.
Yeah, exactly.
Because of the longest yard. It's just gonna happen.
So exactly. But what's most incredible, and I know you've noticed it because it's been popping up the last couple of games, is that pliability is really paying off in Brady's mobility inside the pocket. I saw him do some things that I haven't seen him do in a long time in terms of dip and dive. I mean, it looks like he was training for dodgeball out there, you know, and he avoiding pressure. And I don't know if you noticed this either, but he's added a little sidearm action into his repertoire. Yeah. And I've seen it not just this week, but a couple times throughout the season so far. And, you know, the reality of it is, and this is why he maintains the first spot, another 400 yards. I mean, he's going to obviously break the record in New England. He was going to do that anyways, but, you know, he'll do this. You know, the way sports work, he's going to throw a 69-yard touchdown pass to Rob Gronkowski to start the game.
Perfect.
And that's exactly what's going to break the record. But, yeah, he's playing at such a high elite level. Like, some of the throws that he's making, the velocity, the accuracy, just the, you know, there was one throw he made with a defender coming down where he kind of opened up his body a little bit and kind of contorted it. It was a ridiculous throw that no one's going to pay attention to because he makes it look so easy. But the absurdity is I don't know. It's he's been excellent through 3 weeks. I still think, despite losing to the Rams, now this could change. I think it certainly brought Matt Stafford a lot closer, and certainly my opinion is not, you know, to be taken completely seriously. But I still think he still has the slight edge in, obviously, in my power rankings and in this MVP race because, well, he's the man. He's the man.
Yeah, no, you know, the thing about watching Brady, it's the same thing when you watch Wayne Gretzky or Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, LeBron James. it appears that they've slowed the game down, right? So that everything they do is going at a different speed than everyone else. Like Gretzky talked about that, that, you know, he could see a play happen before it happened because his mind was able to slow everything down. Where the criticism I have with Josh Allen, who had a marvelous game against what is supposed to be a good defense in Washington, is that he seems to speed everything up to the point where he's kind of racing out there. With Brady, I think these moves are that he just looks and says, okay, this guy's coming at me. The normal thing is to panic and do something crazy. Well, he dips. And I remember that play. It was so impressive. And you're doing all this when you've got Aaron Donald breathing down your neck. And I mean, what a force he is. No, he's still playing at an incredible level. But number one for me is Matt Stafford. I picked him at the beginning of the year to win the MVP. I think that's going to happen because oftentimes the MVP is a story, a narrative, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, you know, guy who we all knew had great talent playing for a horrible organization goes to a good organization with a great offensive mind as his head coach and throws for 5,500 yards and 48 touchdowns. So and by all accounts, a really good dude, right? I mean, like, I've never heard anything bad about Matt Stafford. He seems like a good family man, and, you know, he's friends with Clayton Kershaw. They went to high school together. So that's what the narrative is. But, he's playing at a very high level. But Brady, I mean, just, man, even in the loss, he's so damn impressive. Because that look on the sideline you talked about, I'm watching him going, this guy just does not like to lose.
Oh, he
like,
hates it.
It really infuriates him. You know what I mean? Like, most every other quarterback would have said, well, you know, I threw for 432 and whatever. And, you know, we're 2-1. I've won 7 Super Bowls. He looked like he just lost his last game of his career, like he's never going to play again. It's just, it's incredible. It's scary. And again, I think everybody should be frightened when he comes here Sunday coming off a loss.
Look, I mean, he's going to do what he does. I mean, this Patriots defense is vulnerable. He's, you know, not, like you said, he hates losing. I'm pretty sure, like, he'd rather you insult his family than lose. Like, I think he'd get over that quicker than, you know, losing games. And you know what?
Yeah.
That's fine. If you're, from a quarterback perspective, that's what you want. And Tampa Bay should be pretty happy about that. So there you have it, folks. There's our power rankings for our top 5 quarterbacks. And, of course, that's going to do it for us here today on FPC Radio Live. We'll be back tomorrow. We're going to talk more about this week 3 and, of course, get ready for week 4, which is just around the corner. So for myself and for Mr. John Sapicetti, we say have a great day, enjoy your Tuesday, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.